Oh yeah, baby. Today is your day. Time to get out there on the run, 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 and have tons of fun, fun, fun. You're listening to Early Call Time. Oh yeah.
Hey there, folks, and welcome to another episode of Early Call Time, a podcast where we discuss issues and news in the road race industry and get to know some of the people who keep it running. My name is Eli Ash, and I'm joined today, as always, by my co-host, Tony Yamanaka. Hey there, Tony.
Hello.
And today we are also joined by a very special guest, a man who is such a big believer in the podcast that he sponsored it. We have Alex Vanderhoven, CEO of Race Roster and General Manager of ASICS Running Apps. Alex, welcome to the pod.
Thank you for having me, guys. Great to be here.
We are super excited to have you here. And actually, before we get into kind of the meat of what we want to talk about, I want to ask, when you sponsored the pod, ASICS is a publicly traded company, is that right?
That's right.
So did the share price go up by, was it high single digit or low double digit percentages?
Yeah, I had to sneak that one through. I never told anybody about that. That was something that I had to do kind of under the radar. But I'm sure it spiked the stock price there.
Sense, yeah. I tell you. Sense of impact.
Nice. Well, Alex, thanks so much for coming on the pod and for being such a great supporter of the pod. Before we dive in and really learn a lot about something we're really excited to learn about, kind of the reg side of things, the tech side of things, we want to learn a little bit about you as well. So like we said, CEO of Race Roster, General Manager of ASICS Running Apps. But outside of the business side, what's your personal background with running and like your relationship with the sport?
Yeah, thanks for asking. And I'm not going to have a common answer here. I really have no background in running. When we started Race Roster, I couldn't tell you how long a marathon was, and I really didn't understand the industry at all. My personal journey at the time, I had just kind of come off of a five-year stint in consulting, technology consulting at Deloitte. Went back to school, did an MBA, and was kind of looking for a new project. Hooked up with a couple of buddies that I've known for a very long time, and they just had sold a business in the online gaming space. And I was kind of looking for a new project. And so we just started throwing a few things at the wall. This is kind of going back to when, 2009, 10, 11, when Groupon, Living Social, affiliate networks, all that stuff was really hot. And, we dabbled in that space for a little bit and didn't get very far. And then kind of shortly after, another couple friends, Brandon Land, Chantel Wilder, used to be Chantel Land, brother and sister. They were runners, kind of all through, ever since I've known them. And they wanted to host a road race here in our hometown, London, Ontario. So this is going back to 2010. Again, I had no idea what a road race was, but they explained it to me and said, there's an opportunity to get a couple thousand people to a start line. They all spend somewhere between $50 and $100 a head. It's a great party. We should do this. And I said, sounds good. I'm in. And at the time we were really thinking that there was an opportunity to, do something similar to what Rock and Roll was doing, but do it up in Canada, which is where I'm based and Race Roster was founded. And so that's kind of how the whole journey started. We thought we were going to be race directors and we thought we were going to do sort of the next Rock and Roll type of thing up here in Canada. But, it turns out the future went a little differently. We realized that in order to host really good events, we needed better technology. And that's kind of where, my background came in and two of the other guys, Bob Plus and Chan Yin, we kind of put our heads together and started building a platform and kind of before you knew it, we realized that there was a decent business model. And at the time we it was either go the event director route or go technology route. We didn't have any experience in the event director route. So technology made more sense. And we just kind of put our heads down and started working on the platform. And that's really how things got started back in 2011.
Oh man, why oh why did I not have that revelation like 10 years ago? That's awesome. I mean, that's super interesting to hear. And I think it does validate because race roster has such a massive impact, for lack of more eloquent words, in the industry. It's awesome to hear that that impact originated from a non-industry background, which, again, I think that validates a lot of what we say in this podcast, is we almost operate with blinders on because of the workload that we face, that we often forget to look outside of the industry for improvements, and we're caught almost reinventing the wheel when someone's already done it exponentially better, or that solution is already at our fingertips, but we're so focused in doing it like the race director, marathoner, problem solver way, that we refuse to look at outside channels when those answers are literally right there. But, you know, you brought up a really good point, Alex, and I'm kind of curious. So once you decided to take this, you know, fork in the road, and you went from the tech perspective, what were some of these like big decisions that you had to make, or what would you consider like a pivotal decision that you had to make and hopefully get right for Race Roster to, well, what a terrible pun, to start off on the right foot?
I mean, there's so many small decisions that, and sleepless nights. No mega decisions. I think the benefit. So I'll just back up a sec. So anyway, so a continuation of that founding story. You know, there was five of us that started the business, and we all just kind of, you know, put our hands in and said, okay, we're equal shareholders, we're equal members of this team, and you know, it's on the five of us to make sure this thing works. And so when you have five founders that care so much, and this is at a time too when none of us had kids, you know, we were a lot younger then, and this is all we had to focus on, we cared so much about the business, and we had, every time a decision needed to be made, we had five people to, like, you know, weigh in on it. And so nothing ever seemed like it was going to go terribly wrong, thank goodness. But you know, all the micro decisions to build certain features instead of other features, right? Because this client said they might transition to Race Roster if we built it. All those little micro decisions were, you know, they were meaningful. They took time, and we had to get it right. But yeah, it's, you know, we raised money a few times, and that was interesting. You know, you have to decide whether you want to raise debt or you want to sell equity. You know, at the time, it didn't seem like we could go wrong kind of either way. But looking back, you know, the first investor that we brought in, who was a classmate of mine back, you know, from back in undergrad, it's amazing how when you look back and you understand now how bad that decision could have been. It didn't go badly. It went really well, but all those little decisions, I mean, you know, a lot of great things worked out for the team. I think it's because we cared a lot, and we, you know, we discussed things a lot as a team. And so nothing ever felt super risky, but, yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of blabbering on here, but
no, that's what we do. We're loosely constructed, and as you saw leading up to this, highly professional as it relates to creating this podcast. But no, this is kind of the point of it, Alex. Like, I feel like a lot of the stuff that is out there is so incredibly structured, and the way we operate in our regular lives and jobs is like down to the minute, that when we get on here, like, we really want, like, word vomit. We want to hear what... It's a little bit cathartic, let's put it that way, to just kind of dump it out there, and hopefully you don't say anything too embarrassing that when you go back and listen to it, you're slapping yourself in the forehead, which has happened multiple times to me. Yeah. So you wouldn't be alone. You know, talking about all those little micro decisions, one of my favorite podcasts outside of our own, clearly, is one called Startup. I don't know if you've listened to that ever, but that podcast started by following the actual launch of the podcast itself, the media company that hosted the first podcast called Gimlet Media. And it opens with the now host and owner essentially recording himself in an elevator, literally doing an elevator pitch for an investor, and he completely botches it. Like, it's so cringy that your palms are sweating just listening to this. But it does make you, it takes you through the arc of, like, going through a tech startup, and there's two great seasons on it. And inevitably what happens is that there's always that, oh shit moment. Like, this is make or break. Like, we could sink in an hour, or we could, you know, come out smelling like roses. And I guess the question for you is, like, was there ever a breaking point with Race Roster where you're like, I don't think we're going to make it unless, like, this thing comes through, or like a very clear black and white, it's over, or we're going to keep going moment?
Honestly, there isn't. I think, you know, it wasn't always, you know, just, you know, up and to the right, but we cared so much. And if somebody, I mean, we're all friends too, right? And we all had our personal things going on. If somebody, you know, needed a break or was a little down and out, you had four others that cared and could kind of carry through any types of like dips with the founding team and with the entire team, to be quite honest. So no oh shit moments. I mean, certainly, you know, botched launches, you know, like we were at Running USA one year. It was when we were at Disney and like the internet went down. I don't know if you guys remember it. This would have been like 2000 and maybe 15 or 16. And I'm at the conference, and you know, our team is at the conference. All of our biggest clients are at the conference, and Race Roster is not working. Right. You know, at first we don't even look around to see if anything else is not working, but we're just like, oh my God, like the system is down. What do we do? But turns out, you know, like Amazon had a big crash, and Facebook was down, and Netflix and Twitter. And so it was okay. But just all those little irky moments, you know, we still get out of bed middle of the night sometimes. You know, the system is all hooked up to all these different security alarms. And if something's, you know, looking fishy, all of our phones explode and, you know, we're all still so dialed, you know, especially our dev team, you know, any little sneeze or hiccup. And we've got a massive team now that just gets right on it. But those are all like nerve wracking when you care so much. All those little moments are still nerve wracking, you know, and it's usually me that has to get on the phone if it's a big client to explain what's gone on. And I feel if something bad has happened where, you know, a launch wasn't able to happen at the time it's supposed to happen, I feel terrible. Right. And it's impactful to their business, our client's business. It's impactful to our business, and it feels like shit. So, you know, but we learn and we do better. You know, and it's been learning after learning since the beginning.
Alex, I distinctly remember that day where the internet was down because I at the time was with CIM, and we had just swapped to your Reg platform. And the day that happened, we were launching, I believe it was CIM Reg for our first time with y'all. And what I will say is we all went, oh crap, what's going on? And I think as like we were all Googling and seeing like whatever news report about like massive internet wide, I'm going to get this wrong, but I think it's a DDoS attack.
Yep, DDoS, yeah.
Distributed denial of service, not a tech guy, race director here.
Wow.
I think that as we were like Googling that, and this kind of speaks to how your team would jump into action, I think like I got a call on my personal cell from Chantel just going like, hey, heads up. We know you're launching today. We know this is a big day for you because we've been coordinating with you around this, and this is your first launch with us. And the internet is down. We can't fix it, but like, what can we help you with?
Yeah.
And like, we can't fix the internet. You know, Yahoo is down. Facebook is down. Race Roster can't fix all that for us. But it really does speak to kind of how folks were all in, and were in it with their customers. And it was like, hey, like we were, you know, a big early signing. We were invested in our biggest day of the year, and y'all were invested in it with us. And it really does speak to that, like, sort of, I'm going to say, a band of people, not band of brothers attitude, that y'all really did seem to have with your customers to make sure that not just your company, but the folks who have chosen to partner with your company had every resource that you had at your disposal, at their disposal, to assure their success.
Yeah, no, and Eli, I think back to the early adopters, and your team was certainly one of them. I remember I was in California at one of these, you know, accelerator incubator type of things for startup companies when we were on the phone and I was kind of in this back courtyard and you guys had kind of finally agreed to switch over. And it was such a big moment. Every client that switched over in the early days was monumental. Right. And it did, like, those were the oh shit moments that if that didn't happen, you don't know when the next big fish is going to come on board and you need big fish to keep coming on board for this thing to keep moving forward. So, I had this kind of in my sort of prep notes here to make sure I thanked you for being one of the early adopters. Cause it was, you know, for young companies that it makes all the difference. It gives you the confidence and the motivation to just keep going. I've got a laundry list of others too, but wanted to make sure I called that out today.
Well, you're welcome, I guess, Alex, a kingmaker over here, clearly.
Yeah, and if you spaced out at the beginning of this episode, Race Roster is based in Canada, so there's the overtly Canadian kindness gesture of thanking Eli, which is one of the few thank yous Eli probably gets. You know, but we are talking about wins. And, you know, again, like, the business from Eli's team that's a huge win. And obviously recently you guys had a massive gargantuan Godzilla-like win in that acquisition with ASICS. First of all, congratulations. That's incredible. But I wouldn't say like you've made it, and I'm sure you don't necessarily think that yourself. I think you see it as like, hey, this door just opened to get even better at what we do. So with that fantastic question teed up, I mean, the acquisition of ASICS, I don't know. You get what I'm saying. Where does that tee you up from a Race Roster perspective? Like, does that open doors to do stuff that you kind of had on the back burner due to either time or team size? Like, what kind of doors is it opening for you?
Yeah, no. I mean, so many. And I'll start there by saying, you know, this deal happened in November of 2019. So it wasn't too long after when things, you know, became very different in the world. And obviously, you know, so many businesses were impacted, but our industry almost evaporated overnight, and Race Roster would have had I'd have a very different story today if that transaction didn't happen when it happened. But the beauty of it was that, and I, you know, ASICS has been so supportive. You know, when things went south, they said hire more people. You know, when we had to flip to virtual and turn into like a refund machine, they were all on board. And you know, I was nervous. I was like, oh crap! Like, we just sold this thing to this amazing company, and what are they going to think? Like, they're going to think they bought a lemon here, because it wasn't our fault. But the, you know, Race Roster looked very differently in the last year and a half. And we've added, you know, between Race Roster and Runkeeper, 35 people since January 1st, you know, so it's been nothing but support. And the other angle here is that Race Roster now has, so it's so much more meaningful for Race Roster and Runkeeper, and I can talk about how Runkeeper fits into the picture shortly, but it's so much more meaningful now for our business to focus on the runner experience and the runner journey. Because at the end of the day, if the runner experience is amazing, the industry is thriving, runners are loving running events and the training that leads up to it, and just running overall as an activity for you know, helping them achieve their running goals, ASICS benefits from all that, right? So they get that, and they're all in on doing whatever they can to help the running industry thrive. And whether it's events, training, or equipment, or whatever, they see it, and we get to be part of that. And it's honestly a lot of fun. Before, we were in this processing fee game, right? And for 10 years, we were after processing fees. So somebody pays $100 and we make $5. That I didn't feel like that was a pathway to adding a ton of value, A, to our clients, and B, to the industry. And now it's so different. And And I'm not going to say we don't care about processing fees because we still need to fund our operations, but it's so much more about understanding how runners, you know, think about, you know, when they register for an event, there's a whole journey that kicks off. That commitment for each and every single runner, whether it's a 5K, their first 5K, or it's their third marathon, that journey is important to them, and they care, and they train, and they change their behavior, and they shop, you know, and they do things that they dedicate their lives to that kind of like end goal of completing a marathon. And now we get to participate in kind of all that, you know, and so what that means for, you know, our team and our clients is just that I think we want to bring so much more to the table than just registration tech and data collection, which I think we do a really, really good job at already. And, you know, we continue to invest in all of the tools that race directors need, but now it's like, hey, I think we've got all the technology that race directors need. And in fact, I'm certain that there are very few technology barriers. Usually it's like a, you know, resource barrier on, you know, the client side. They don't have a marketing team because, I mean, especially after the last year, I know a lot of race teams that are, you know, had to cut back. And so it's, you know, I don't see the future as being limited by technology. It's really kind of being limited by team size and resources and people are really trying to like figure out where they should invest their time to grow their events and improve the runner experience. And we're all in on that. You know, we're lucky. That's what we do every single day is try to figure out how to help our clients improve the runner experience so that this industry can thrive.
Yeah. A lot to unpack there for sure. But you know, I think from a super boil it down takeaway, it's kind of, you know, don't settle on table stakes of what you can do, but just keep pursuing what you believe is the right thing to do and what you're passionate about. As you build this platform out, it starts gaining value that may not be immediately monetary for you guys, but it does build a relationship of being able to better service the industry, create relationships within these race directors. And I think a lot of that is parallel to what we saw during the pandemic. So the races that were in it for a little bit, I don't want to say smash and grab, but very transactional of like, come run our race, we are fast, we will give you medal, versus the ones that actually spent the last 3, 5, 10, 20, 50 years, whatever it is, building relationships with their runner base. They are the ones that fared far better during, you know, the pandemic, because it's more than just a company. You've created this relationship with people that they genuinely believe and know that you care about them more than you just want them to purchase XYZ. And the second point that you made there is, you know, when you saw this dip and you became into what you call a refund machine, which is, that was probably like the equivalent of watching like the market crash from a stockbroker perspective. But for us as race directors, we were watching the registration companies with like, holy shit, like how are they going to manage these chargebacks? How are they going to protect themselves in the future? How are people getting paid out? But you noted something that piqued my interest, which is that ASICS actually greenlit to hire more people to, you know, bolster the team. And whether that was because of the influx of what was going on or because they believe that now is the time to invest, essentially. So a little bit of a buy low perspective. You know, in 2008, when we saw that first crash, or I guess the first crash for our generation, it was the opposite, right? Almost everyone cut their marketing team, and the companies that kept their marketing team are the ones that actually came out on top and like substantially stronger. So mm-hmm. instead of holing up and kind of, you know, shoring up all the walls and, you know, barricading the doors, protecting all the cash flow, everyone was so concerned about protecting their existing cash reserves that they weren't focusing on generating new ones, which is really interesting. And there's I can't quite connect those two concepts of, you know, servicing because we're passionate about it and we can service our customer base in this way, and also reinvesting in it to continue to develop new cash flow down the line. But I don't know, I probably need some time to marinate on those two ideas, but it was interesting to me just hearing you position those in the same statement. So that's that.
And Alex, I think the thing that I hear in that there too is sort of like, that idea of investment that like Race Roster is a company that was deeply invested, like I said, in the, making sure that the folks that choose to partner with them have access to all of their resources. And then like throughout the pandemic, I think we saw that, and then an ability to invest more deeply in that. I mean, you and I had a series of conversations, both CIM and Twin Cities in Motion are Race Roster clients. And you know, in, you know, discussing, hey, here's where, you know, virtual events are going or whatever, like you and I had a couple conversations there, and I'm sure you were doing that and your team was doing that with other clients as well. And I do think that idea of investment in like doing really good data gathering, like from those folks and going, all right, what is it that you need? And then being able to invest in it, possibly because of that sweet, sweet ASIC Skrilla. being able to do that at that time, I think is something that really has allowed Race Roster to, you know, flourish at a time where not necessarily all companies are. And you wouldn't always know this from how our podcast sounds, but we do prepare a little bit. But I want to jump down a couple questions from where I was planning on this going, because really what you were talking about there, it was about the present. But one of the things that the pandemic I've heard that I think makes a lot of sense is that it is going to make us all get where we were going to get 3 to 5 years faster. It's kind of just accelerating trends and making us all move forward. And I think that you, Alex, are one of the closest things that like the running industry has to a futurist. Like you said earlier on, you're not necessarily from the running industry. You kind of bring sometimes this outsider perspective, but also now have developed this deep internal knowledge. And I actually described Race Roster the other day to someone as like running's future technological overlord. And I meant it mostly in a good way, because really being able to sort of use these tools to help move us all forward. But so seeing this industry that, you know, has gone through these challenges, but is kind of rapidly moving into some new spaces, and having had some time during the pandemic to really say, hey, what we were doing is going to be different, and then potentially having some resources to invest both now and hopefully on into the future. What does that future look like? Like, what's technology and running going to be coming out of this pandemic? And like, what areas do you think, like you and Race Roster and Runkeeper, certainly a tool that we should talk about as relates to this as well, will have like the greatest effects going forward, you know, and whether it's the partnership space or like you alluded to some participant experience or year-round engagement, or is there something else entirely that you're super excited to see how Race Roster and Runkeeper can impact the future direction of the running industry and what it provides to its consumers?
Yeah. There's so much there. You know, there's, we can talk about this from a Race Roster to Race Director perspective. We can talk about it from the runner to Race Roster to race perspective. There's just so much that can be done still. You know,
let me focus you a little bit, because I actually really like the way you broke that out. I'm really interested to hear about that. First, let's start with that Race Roster to Race Director perspective. And then I'm really interested in if there are any other buckets that you would break that out into. We can maybe move on into any of those other buckets, like Race Roster to person running a race. Well, let's start with Race Roster to Race Director.
And you touched on it earlier, like this past year, I think really highlighted how important it is for brand to for race any company to build their brand. And you know, you mentioned that the races that have been around for a long time and had that brand probably did a little better than the smash and grab organizations that we saw come into this space. You know, I think those big brands, they endured. They got through it, and now we're on the other side of it. And because they had built a strong brand over the last, let's say, you know, up to 50 years, runners wanted to still engage. And that's a great thing. And so to help our clients, help the races engage with runners, you know, we stepped into the virtual space in a pretty big way. You know, my opinion on virtual events going forward, I think, you know, now we're in this hybrid phase. And I think we're going to see that stick around. You know, I think it doesn't hurt at all to have that element or that offering for your runners. If somebody has been attending your event every single year, and now for whatever reason they can't make it, let them join a virtual event and let them, you know, let them keep their streak going. What's, you know, what's it to us as race directors, as events? I mean, it's, this is a business at the end of the day, and don't upset your clients by limiting opportunities. You know, if this is something they're looking for, to continue on with their love for your brand. And it's easy enough to do, really, right now. There's no limitations for race directors to offer virtual experiences to their runners. So give it to them, right? And you know, as we move forward, I think, you know, there's so let's talk about Runkeeper for a sec. Runkeeper was one of the first run tracking GPS-based run tracking apps on the App Store when Apple decided that apps were going to be a thing. And so now we've got this app that is you know, merging with our race roster company, you know, from a technology perspective, from a team perspective. You know, and we're working on a lot of things there too, because it's not just about race day. You know, there's a lot that happens before a race day or race weekend that the runners are investing in. So it's training and it's all these different things. And if we can give, you know, the events that we work with an opportunity to engage with runners, obviously, you know, you guys, event directors, do a great day on race weekend, but it's, you know, can you create easily training groups and training plans for all the runners based on what the runner's trying to achieve. You know, we as ASICS, we know so much about runners. You know, we kind of break it down into four groups. You know, we got the run sensei, which is this ambitious, inspired, sort of like, you know, super serious runner. We've got, and then the other side of the spectrum is sort of this fitness runner who's sort of more focused on, you know, wanting to look good, feel good, and use running to stay in shape. And we see across all of our events, like this sort of spectrum of runners that show up. And it's really like us as events, we've got to appeal to these runners based on what they're trying to get out of the events. If it's accountability to just kind of help them stay healthy and fit, then, you know, the running events in our industry can serve those runners, and the ones that do will see a lot of runners show up to their start line. You know, so it's I think understanding who is showing up to these races and why, and then really diving deep into helping them have an amazing experience from the moment that they sign up for the event right through race weekend, and then kind of saying, hey, hope that was great. Here are all the great things that we're doing next year for you to make it even better based on now our even more intimate understanding of who you are, because we know your results for this race. And so now we know you even better, right? And now you're getting into data and how you synthesize that data and use it. I mean, there's so much. And when you've got, you know, when you've got a good CRM, and you're collecting the right data, you can segment and then talk to these people like they're your buddies, right? And that's how you keep that brand connection. That's how you keep them coming back. And that's the reason why they go out and tell their friends why your race is better than the next one, right? Because it's a whole, it engulfs them in the experience. You know, and that's what we're trying to get. I know this sounds like kind of pie in the sky, but that's what we try and get our technology to do is aid these experiences. The best technology is invisible, right? You think of Airbnb or Uber, like you're using like the amount of tech that has to happen in the background for you just to hail a cab to show up to your, you know, your house to take you to wherever you want to go, or for you to like book a little vacation in someone else's house across the world. Like it's so easy, but the amount of tech is just massive and you know, the financial implication, the tax implication, all the things that those companies need to figure out to make the experience great, is all just technology kind of working back and forth. You know, but it's invisible at the end of the day, and it's all focused on great customer experience. And, you know, I think that's what race directors need to be focused on. And that's what we aim to kind of help race directors provide to that runner.
And for that runner, I really like what you just said about like the invisible stuff happening in the background to make that happen. Cause I also feel like that doesn't just apply to tech. That also, you know, applies to the event itself.
Totally.
I really like that. And all of these sort of cohorts that duck, paddling under the surface furiously and on top, it looks, you know, of the lake, it looks immensely calm. But I'm really curious, I guess, for that runner. And I just heard some really good tools, and these are some tools that for my team use that are currently developed and are being developed further to kind of make a difference for race directors to be able to communicate to their runners. But then I'm also really interested in what you think about what the tech can do for runners themselves. And I don't know whether this is something where, hey, if you use Runkeeper, here's a thing that's a really cool, fun experience. And then if any of those things are something that race directors could in any way tie to their, hey, are you registered for this event? Also use this app to do this and expand what you described as that really good race day or race weekend experience to a multi-week, month, or year-round sort of engagement with that customer.
Yeah. So today, I mean, the easiest thing is giving a runner the right training plan, you know, based on what their goal is when they set out to run your event. And that's where Runkeeper can serve runners really well now. But I think the future is about, you know, the interactions between running partners and running groups. And then even on race day, when you have your headphones in and you're trying to achieve a personal best, and the app knows that you're trying to achieve a personal best, and they're telling you, hey, if you just pick it up just a little, you can do it, you know, and being that kind of like real-time coach in your ear is really such a huge opportunity. And I think it's like, that's where we're going to be able to enhance the experience. And we can build that into, and we are building that into the event experience. Right now, one of the things we're working on is sort of this pre-race, race director led audio guided run. I know that seems like a lot, but what that boils down to is a runner can go on a run and you've got Eli, you know, if you want to give the runner a sort of like the what to expect on race weekend, you can record a 30-minute recording saying, hey, we're so happy to see you, you know, in a couple of weeks, here's how things have changed this year. You know, this is where you're going to want to park. This is the porta potty situation. Masks or no masks. Here's how we're dealing with hydration. And we can deliver this sort of like pre-race experience that is attached to the event, you know, before the runner gets there, and we can do more. Right. And again, it's like, so we've created a bunch of tools. And so technology, I really feel is not a huge barrier anymore. It's more about creativity and marketing and what race directors want to do to engage with their runners. And I think, you know, us as race runners, we could do a better job. I wish I could have an hour call with every single one of our clients to be like, hey, here's what I'm seeing, here's what we've developed, and here's how you should use it, because it's difficult to get that type of information across in just an email, right? Or however else we, you know, you market those types of features and enhancements, because I feel like it takes a good conversation to be like, yeah, but look, you can do this, and here's how, and it's easy, and it's not expensive, or it's free, you know. So yeah, I think, you know, that's sort of where we're headed. It's interesting. I mean, the at home sort of fitness industry just had the biggest boom in that kind of category's lifetime. And you know, what have we seen happen? It's all this stuff that's video guided. You know, I think you can't have a video in front of you while you're running. So we've got to leverage audio in smart ways. And you know, that's, I think, one of the ways that we're going to help enhance this runner experience for those that sign up for events and those that are just, you know, leveraging running to achieve personal goals.
Yeah, the audio element to me is huge, and both from, I guess, well, the new feature that you're mentioning right now, from like a little bit of a Cliff Notes beforehand, it's a lot easier to listen to someone explain to you rather than try to blast out a bunch of emails and hope someone reads that. If they're in Corral A, they can't, you know, they could go to B, C, D, but D can't go to A. Like, there's such like baseline stuff that I wish, like you said, you wish you could speak with every prospective race or current client. Like, from a race director perspective, like, we wish we could speak to every single runner and explain to them, you know, how this functionality is going to work on race day. But even from a tech perspective that you're mentioning, in particular Runkeeper, which is super interesting to me, is, now we're seeing race directors kind of take the platforms, so both on the race roster and Runkeeper side, and almost manipulate them to create new product offerings from a race perspective. So case in point, like with Texas Distance Challenge, we started stacking different elements to achieve different journeys. And then with Mount Olympus, so Run to Escape from BibRave, like they leveraged the audio aspect of what Runkeeper can do to create a totally different type of run journey, which I wish I had some involvement in that. I came like right as they were putting the, you know, the final details on that project. But it's just really impressive that if you have the time to like dig in, you can really work with just an obscene amount of like bells and whistles within both Race Roster and Runkeeper that I think are mostly untapped, even from like a consumer basis. I didn't know that you could change the voices within Runkeeper. So I immediately defaulted to the Boston Sports Fan, which is the absolute funniest thing when you're running. Eli, I don't know if you've done this, but it legit is like a Boston, exactly what you can think of, like sports guy that probably wears his Red Sox jersey on like a weekday when the season's out, go get Dunkies in the morning. But he's like, "You got it, kid." Like, it's just funny. Like, it's not something you'd expect because I think everyone takes running so seriously. You know, conversely, if you look at Strava, it's all very like, it's all business. As much as you want to throw challenges in there, there's not a whole lot of elements that make it enjoyable or bring back the fun into running. But again, me going on my weird rant there, but you did mention, Alex, that it's hard to explain to race directors that there is like this tech because it's hard to communicate just via email. Historically, is there anything that you see in the platform, either on Race Roster or Runkeeper, that you're like, this is so underutilized, but it's such a big piece of what can make their events greater or make your run better or help you develop a better experience? Like, is there something that you're just like, I wish people would pay more attention to this component?
Yeah, you're just teeing them up for me now. Absolutely. We built a CRM platform on top of Salesforce, which is basically like a configured version of Salesforce specifically for race directors based on all the things that we know that race directors need because they tell us. It's so important for race directors to take the time to look at their data, understand their data, you know, take an approach with their data, have different strategies for different segments, right? Like you should talk to people that have run your race five or more times differently than people that have just given you an email address and indicated that they may be interested in running one day in the future. And the benefit of this CRM offering that we have is that when Salesforce comes out with a new enhancement, which, you know, Salesforce is the best CRM platform in the world. So when they've got this Einstein AI feature set, I'll call it, that our clients get to leverage. And I was on with one of our engineers about 2 weeks ago, and he was showing me some of the stuff that you can do with weather. You know, and you can set different emails to go out based on what's happening in a person's, you know, local geography in terms of weather. So if it's raining, you can send them an email that specifically talks to, you know, running in the rain or hey, feeling down, you should, you know, why not sign up? Or you know, and conversely, you know, if the weather is sunny, you know, and I don't know necessarily exactly what we do with those situations, but the fact that we can target people based on like, you know, geographical circumstances, I think is pretty incredible. And the other thing is, you know, being able to send people emails when they open them. So if you have a campaign and you want to send it out, you know, you can hit send on whatever day or time you want to hit send. But if you're using this one enhancement, it won't send the email to you, Tony, until like Thursday night, because based on the last five times we sent you an email, we know that you open the email and read them most of the time on Thursday nights. And so it's just mind blowing. And, it all, and this is the thing, like technology is no longer a barrier, right? It's does somebody want to take the time to sit down to be like, hey, okay, I understand that I have this opportunity to use technology like this. What do I do with it? And that's the next phase here. Like we've got to, you know, Race Roster's responsibility is to be a coach and really educate, you know, our clients on how to leverage technology like this. And, you know, if somebody's doing something really good in Texas, you know, how does that relate to what's going on in Minnesota? Can you just take the same lessons learned, or, you know, and also like, what do you need to kind of switch up for the, you know, for the demographic? So it's wild, right? It's technology is more and more sort of like eliminating, you know, friction and creating so many possibilities. And now it just comes down to like whether you're a good marketer or not, whether your team is creative, whether you have the resources and headcount to just dig into this stuff, which I love. It's super exciting and truly mind blowing.
And I want to sit on that for a tiny bit. So one of the, I'm not going to call it a cop out, but let's call it, I'm going to call it a cop out, is often we don't have the bandwidth to, or we don't have the hours or manpower to. So when we're talking about this data and setting all this stuff up, actually being able to sift through, setting up the CRM, managing the CRM, is that as big of a lift as it's put out to be, or I guess perceived to be from a race director perspective? And I'm guessing the reason that this isn't implemented is we can collect all the data we want, but do we have the time to process it? And that's usually where the stiff arm comes from the race side, as I've seen year over year. And I just don't think that the lift is, it may be somewhat of an investment immediately, but once you get it set up, I feel like it should become fairly easy to just like touch base and implement as part of your routine. Is that because the technology is there to do it? Like we're no longer there doing, you know, pivot tables on a spreadsheet. Like we have Salesforce behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, from our perspective, part of the program is that we will help you cleanse the data, organize it, sync it up with, you know, past records from past platforms, so that you don't have to get it to a state where it's usable. Where I wish our race directors had sort of more time to kind of like dig in is just simply training on the system, right? Like just getting used to it and getting comfortable with it, because it's so robust, right? You know, Tony, you could tell me, hey, I want to drive really fast. I'd be like, Tony, here is an F1 race car, right? You're like, I don't know what to do with that, but you know, it will achieve your goal of driving fast if that's where you want to go, or what you want to get out of it. And so it's just taking the time to train on the technology and then, you know, working with our team to just understand how to use it. But we can get it to a state where you don't have to worry about the cleansing and the organization. It's really just, you know, taking the time to understand how to use tech, and because it is so robust, I mean, it can be intimidating, but it's, you know, the bigger organizations that we work with that take the time to invest, it's pretty remarkable what they're doing with the technology these days.
Yeah, absolutely. And we, you know, over a very hot, sweaty beer in Puerto Rico, I think, you know, around 2 a.m, I'm pretty sure I said to you, like, we are stuck in like the ice age. You are the first company that's actually forcing people to look at tech and implement it. And when Christina, now a current employee of yours, was asking me like, what do you know about Race Roster? The first thing that came out of my mouth, it's like, it's CRM. They have Salesforce. That is like the secret sauce to me, or your unique selling proposition. And I'm sure you have a different view on what that is. But to me, it's like, that is the one thing that makes Race Roster more than just a registration platform. Granted, there are a bunch of other elements, but to me, that's like the crown jewel of what it is. So I'm glad you brought that up. Especially, you know, when you were mentioning like it's hard to communicate it via email, We have a very small but concentrated audience. So the people that you are probably trying to communicate via email are the people listening to this podcast. So now is the time to kind of you know, explain that as well as you can. But I think you've done a great job up to this point, for sure.
Yeah, and I should caveat too, because I think, you know, because Salesforce can be intimidating, I mean, it's not, and I should say it's not for everybody, right? Some races don't need that. Don't need a Formula One car, right? They just don't. It's either too cumbersome. They won't take the time to train in terms of how to use it. And so there's a whole spectrum of things that, you know, this is sounding a bit like a commercial, but Race Roster can meet the races kind of where they're at. We got into the CRM game and the Salesforce game because we heard from, you know, starting is kind of at the very like elite level of racing. You know, these races that will host 50, 60, 70, 100,000 runners a year, maybe 200,000 runners a year. Like they needed a different tool, right? They needed something that could do the heavy lifting and sifting. But if you're an organization that is, you know, you're seeing, I don't know, from 500 to 5,000 runners a year, you don't need Salesforce to be successful. You know, so I think that's also an important aspect here is that there's a lot of technology out there and in the Race Roster platform that can meet race directors where they're at.
Yeah, and keeping this like SpawnCon going, I guess, like you said. I really like that distinction between the couple different, you know, size buckets of races that you drew there. So key takeaway, that race of 500 to 5,000, what's the one piece of low-hanging fruit that from all the data that you're crunching, not from one race of 500 to 5,000, but maybe the 1,000 races of that size, several thousand races of that size that you have on your platform, what's the one piece of low-hanging fruit that those small to mid-size racing organizations are leaving on the table with Race Roster that can help make a difference for them? I'm totally putting you on the spot. This wasn't any sort of prep.
No, that's fair. That's fair. And it's an easy answer. So there's this triggered based email engine that we've built that will, based on, you know, the responses that runners put in the registration form, it can trigger a follow-up email. And so that technology alone just opens the doors to so many opportunities. And I think every race in that 500 to 5,000 range probably has, you know, hopes of becoming, you know, a 600 to 6,000 size race or, you know, or beyond that. And this trigger-based email engine that we've got can do so much. I mean, it can help you with sponsorship. If you're a small race and you're like, hey, any brand, we'd love for you to, you know, sponsor a race. Well, the brand's going to say, well, what's in it for us? And the race director's response should be like, well, what are you trying to get, you know, or what would you love to know more about with this runner audience or runner population that we have? And that brand should tell you what they want. They might try and get an offer out to the runners. They might try and educate the runners about something. They might want the runners to show up to their store on a certain date. Well, you can plant questions in the registration form that based on the answer will then send the runner a follow-up email saying, you know, here's this message from a sponsor, one of our partners. And by the way, based on your response, you know, this partner wants to serve you this or provide you with this opportunity. And so that to me is just like the one like thing that I wish more race directors leveraged on the platform. Cause it's such an amazing tool and it's so open to like race directors being like super creative with it. So
yeah, we got to Shark Tank that, Al. We got to like throw that out there to a group of like 20 RDs and be like, all right, let's go. Who's got the best idea with this?
Well, honestly, I'll just quickly like in Toronto, we've got a race and they just leverage it to like send out gift cards, right? Based on the event that you sign up for. You sign up for this event, you get this, you get a $50 gift card. You sign up for this event, you get a $30. You sign up for this, you get a $20. And, you know, people then get to go use that gift card at a store and oftentimes feel like they're getting all of their value back just through that gift card. They pay $50 for the event, they get a $50 gift card and they feel like they're making out like a bandit, right? And the store is pumped because they got new people coming into their store. So just easy things like that that I think are so valuable.
Yeah, and I think a race of any size can learn from that. But we were kind of targeting that at small to mid-size. And maybe for larger, it's harder because truly every race is a snowflake, and really those snowflakes get complicated at a certain size. But maybe one of the big things I heard about large races was really getting to know their data and using CRM. Is there any other key takeaway you would have for utilization of race roster or utilization of tech for a mid-size to large race?
I think it's, I mean, there's, you know, races make money a few different ways, right? Obviously one through registration, that's probably the biggest revenue source. But sponsorship is massive too. And I don't think races traditionally have done an amazing job delivering value to sponsors. And it's a lot of it is still show up on race weekend, you see signage everywhere. The sponsor's kind of not sure what they're getting out of the deal. And that's why you've seen sort of sponsors kind of enter and exit our space. I'll tell you, when a race sends an email to a runner, the open rate is like 300%. When a brand sends an email to a runner, the open rate's like 10 to 20% if we're, if it's a good email. So that envelope that race directors send that email through, if a brand can attach itself to, and we can, that's the brand's opportunity to get the value of the sponsorship. And so race directors, I think, really need to be mindful of how they can bring value to the sponsors, not just on race weekend, but during that time leading up to the race, when runners are shopping and spending money on new shoes and spending money on apparel and spending money on nutrition and training plans and all the things that they spend money on, you've got to give your sponsors an opportunity to reach the runners way in advance of race weekend. And again, like if you can tell your sponsors, hey, look, we think that we've got three different runner types here, super serious, people that are, not so serious, and people that run with their families. You're a brand that sells this. We will talk to each of these groups in these three ways. And it just kind of like blows open the conversation. I think that's where events can really still garner a lot of value, because at the end of the day, I mean, only so many, well, some races have capacity, right? So you can only host 10,000 people. Well, then how do you make more money? You go to the sponsorship side of the equation, and that's a little more limitless, a lot more up, quite a bit of upside on that side of the equation, and tons of opportunity if you're delivering value to the sponsors through communication to your runners. I hope that's helpful to answer that last question, Eli.
I think it was, Eli. You can stay quiet forever, hold your peace, I suppose.
I'm not super good at doing that, Tony.
I know you're not. You're terrible at it. No, but I mean, you again, like bringing up the points that I think we've echoed so many times on this podcast is there is such a lack of innovation for the large part, and not because we don't want to, mostly because everyone feels very strapped for time. So, this conversation of putting up signage, a logo on the back of the shirt, like that stuff's been beat to death in terms of this is not effective. And I think JT mentioned that and went on a pretty solid rant when he was on the episode at Running USA Austin. That was a large part of my communication as well. And I think I opened with the industry as being lazy as a whole, which I have to recommend. Do not start like a keynote presentation with that to the audience. overtly blunt. But it is, there's so much opportunity there to do really cool stuff. And the one concern I have with that, Alex, is like, are we burning the candle down to the point where it's going to be twice as much effort to bring sponsors back? Like, are we basically shuffling through them so quickly that now we've lost the ones that we could consider endemic and even endemic adjacent, that now it's going to be twice the workload to get them back in the door and build that trust again? So that's my biggest fear right now for the industry as a whole, because we are seeing I would say comfortably like a bleed out of sponsorship that have shifted. You're seeing major, major brands pull out of the endurance space in terms of sponsorship, like Cliff Bar, for example. Like, they systematically cut out all of their races, and they're essentially just leaving either the really big ones or waiting for existing multi-year agreements to fade out so they don't renew. And now they're shifting over into lifestyle. I think that speaks volumes to not only what we have to offer as an industry, but where the market trends are going. So you could argue that millennials and Gen Z probably don't classify themselves as runners. They classify themselves as active or athletes, and that means that they run in addition to XYZ. So where previously the angle and the desire from the running industry was, how do we retain runners? Well, that was never really the question. Is how do we fold ourselves into this greater ecosystem of exercise that everyone can be involved in? And you hit the nail on the head, which is, if we can use CRM, if we can identify frequency of run, communicate that to the brands, now they're touching those runners at the point where it means most to them, whether it is Thursday night at 8 p.m. because that's when we know they open it, or on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays because that's when they log runs in Runkeeper. That's the best time to contact the runners. But I think being able to go at them from a technology perspective, both on the runner and brand side, is invaluable. And as Eli, you mentioned, like, now is the time to make that enormous leap forward that we otherwise would have, you know, shuffled, like chain gang shuffled over the next 5 years. Now we can achieve this in the next 2 years. But it's just a matter of openness and willingness to do that. But again, this is just this awesome conversation. So I'm definitely just firing on all cylinders in terms of ideas and just concepts of where we're going. But Alex, you know tech better than we do. Is there anything that we haven't covered with regard to Runkeeper, race roster, the industry, how expos are boring and broken and money losers for everyone?
I mean, just to back up for a sec too, I think the sort of retraction of sponsors is short term. I think, and this is a little bit of data, but also a lot of gut, I think the running industry is going to see the best 10 years it's ever seen over the next 10 years. And I don't know that we're going to see more races. And I think it's a really interesting time because I think cities, you know, given what we just gone through, aren't going to be like, and especially in Canada, aren't like lining up to give out permits. So, but they will give permits to the races that have been around for a long time, have proven that they can follow rules and do good by the city and, you know, kind of keep things under control. I think those races are going to thrive, and I think sponsors are going to flock to those races because experiential marketing is still so critical. And I think races are going to start to leverage technology that puts the sponsors in more lucrative parts of the runner journey. It's not just going to be on race weekend, but it'll be a training series sponsored by, and by the way, like, this company makes shoes. So here's an offer to buy some shoes at the beginning of your training journey, not at the expo the day before. You know, and so I think you're going to see brands approaching races, different types of events, saying, hey, can we do this? We'd like to do this because this is what we're trying to achieve as a company. And races need to be open to that. And the good news is, again, like, the technology exists to connect runners with sponsors, which I think is just a huge, like, not an untapped part of our industry. It's a part of our industry that just hasn't evolved at all. And there's such a huge opportunity. So the first movers in our industry who are really connecting brands with runners in a meaningful way and showing real ROI, like, I'm talking real dollar for dollar ROI, will see a lot more money flow towards them. That's where things are going to evolve. And that's, you know, and that's a great thing because then races have more money to put better experiences on, host different types of experiences. So, you know, that's I don't even remember what the original question here
was. I think it wasn't so much a question. It was, again, like very aligned with what you're saying and a little bit of a warning shot. It's like, hey, if you want to capitalize on the boom that's coming up, let's call it that for the time being, or, you know, retain, bring in more, whatever you want to do. Like, it's no more table stakes. Like, this is one of the biggest revenue generators for the industry, the race itself. Like, why are we phoning in partnerships and sponsorships? There's a handful of races that do it extremely well. P3R, like, again, they're almost like the, you know, the can do nothing child on the early call time podcast, but they just do so much so well that it's easy to turn to them and look at it. But yeah, look at how they do their sponsorship models. Like, they retain extremely well, they activate extremely well, they're creative, they're engaging, and they hit people at the right times, right? So I think, yes, I agree. We're going to see, you know, a great, let's not call it a comeback, but growth and the best 10 years, as you said, Alex. But in order to capitalize on like the interest and the growth of the sport, we can't just serve up the same like cold plate of food, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think it's, we've had a year and a bit now to think about how to do things differently. And I think a lot of races have spent that time well, and they are going to do things differently. And I think they're looking at, paring back on the things that haven't worked. And I, you know, from, you know, you talk about P3R, like I talk to Troy often, and he's a shark. He knows what he's doing, and he's going to come out of this better than they went into it. You know, and I've got, you know, a bunch of friends in the industry that are really taking this time to, you know, to kind of shuffle the deck and improve the way they were doing things. And there's a lot of upside for those first movers that take advantage. So excited to see kind of where things go from here.
Yeah, we are excited to see where things go from here as well, Alex. And we, I think, are going to go ahead and wrap this up and roll on into the weekend. We're recording on a Friday afternoon. But before we do, I have a question that we ask all of our guests, and I'm actually really curious what this answer will be like for you, or if it will even apply. But our evergreen closer is, we like to ask folks on come on the pod, when you finish working on your biggest annual event, what event is it? What day and time is it? Where do you go? What do you do, and who do you do it with? So I'm curious what that's like for the CEO of a reg company. Alex, when you finish working on your biggest annual event, what happens? What do you do? What's the ritual?
Yeah, I love that question. And the beauty for me is that I've got dozens of biggest annual events. You know, I love the night before the race, and I love the post race. Our role is typically, you know, something around solutions, the race more, you know, on race morning. And once solution, you know, once the race kicks off and people have sorted out their sort of last minute bib transfers, or they lost their bib, or whatever it is that they need to figure out, we help them with it. We kind of get to sign off. And so either that would mean a nap, you know, or something. The one kind of like long standing tradition, is a couple of folks on our team, Evan and Sarah, we go to Dallas every year, and we'll rent the Lime scooters, or the Uber scooters, or whatever they are now. And we'll kind of, this is near the end of the race, so the roads are still closed, most of the people are off the course, and we'll just zip kind of backwards down the race course into Deep Ellum, and we go to this place called Revolver Taco, and we just gorge on tacos for a few hours, and then maybe a few Coronas or Souls to go along with it, and then try and scooter our way back. But no, there's so many good experiences, and I love, I mean, you guys know me, I love celebrating kind of almost anything, but certainly the post race is a great time to celebrate and just kind of reflect on everything that's just happened. You know, Falmouth is another great race that got a bunch of friends on the organizing committee there that you know, we've got our traditions after the race, and that's a lot of fun. But Yeah, I mean, it's great. That's my favorite part of this whole shtick here, is being able to go to the events and kind of see it all come together and celebrate after. So,
yeah, I always say that really our job in this industry is to help people set, achieve, and then celebrate fitness goals. And we get to celebrate when we finish too. And we finished today, so let's celebrate ourselves that this is a wrap for this episode of Early Call Time, the podcast where we discuss issues and news in the road race industry and get to know some of the people who keep it running. One more huge thank you to you, Alex, for coming on the ECT pod today and sharing your insights and experiences with all different aspects of both the past of the running industry and, you know, what it takes to launch a race roster, and also a little bit of the future of where you think the industry and its tech are going to go and how we can improve what we do. So a huge thank you to you, Alex, for coming on today. It's been an absolute delight having you on the pod.
Yeah, and thanks to you guys, and thanks for, you know, all you do for this industry and for your, you know, for the organizations that you work for, you know, and just thanks to everybody in this industry that have helped out, helped Race Roster kind of become what it is today. Huge shout out to the Race Roster team that continues to grow and grow and grow. But I just, you know, I love what you guys are doing. Really appreciate you putting in the time for this podcast, and anything we can do to help support, just let us know.
Awesome. All right. And thanks so much for listening. As always, early risers, we'll catch you bright and early on the next episode of Early Call Time.
If organizing running events is your job, join Tony and Eli and all their friends on the Early Call Time pod.